public hearing. Let me look this over again. We're not in a public hearing mode. We're in a work session on House Bill 2828. And Representative Krupp here to tell us what amendments to help us get this bill on the way.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, again, it's my pleasure to be before you. I'm State Representative Jeff Krupp, District 37. And you have in front of you the -88 amendments, which were the result of Senator Byer's eagle eye in looking at Section 5 of the A. and Gross bill, which wasn't really broad enough language. We decided to allow school districts and school board members to be also immune from lawsuits under the provisions of this bill. So Legislative Council drew that a particular amendment up for us, and that's what we're asking you to work into the bill today along with the conflict amendments. Very much appreciate the opportunity to move the bill to the floor.
We need the A7 conflict amendments and the A8 amendments.
Mr. Chair, move the A7.
Senator Byers moved the A7 amendments. Any objections? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, move the A8.
Senator Byers has moved the A8 amendments to House Bill 2828. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair, House Bill 2828 to the floor as amended.
Senator Byers moved House Bill 2828 as amended to the floor to do best recommendation. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Senator
Carter.
Aye. Senator
Byers.
Aye.
Aye. Having received the necessary majority, House Bill 2828 is moved to the floor to do best recommendation. I mean,
thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I'm very pleased.
There you go. I'll go. I won't care. Hey, nice. Way it ought to be. Thank you. Appreciate it. Well, Senator Byers. Now, we will
be ready on.
We will publish on Senate Bill 1325. And yes, people signed up. I don't have a list. I would like you to do that. He's right next door Please. All right. We'll allow Senator Wilde to bring his testimony on Senate Bill 1325. And
hello, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Thomas Wilde, State Senator, District 8, and I brought forward SB 1325 at the request of Don Fell, and it's interesting because I've tended to research a whole bunch of things, but one thing I never realized is that we had mercury in fluorescent light tubes, which happened to be over our heads at this moment. Well, most of us know the toxic characteristics of mercury and how difficult it is to deal with. And at least I know as a child, I used to enjoy going out in the woods and taking fluorescent light tubes and smashing them against any rock I possibly could. That was great fun, and I'm sure a lot of kids still do that. The fact is, we have not really been dealing with recycling these items with any great regularity. As a matter of fact, in the region, there's only one primary recycler, and that's up in Washington, and it only works on a part-time basis on these sorts of things. And I've heard that this sort of task force and looking at these things is not necessary because we're already recycling these things. Well, I would have to say that any statement to that effect is a farce because, in fact, we have very few places to take these items. How is it we can be recycling them if we don't have any place that processes them? So I know DEQ has made comments that, oh, no, no, this isn't necessary. Well, in my opinion, yes, it is necessary. And I hope you will look upon it favorably. I'm sure John will fill you in extensively. And normally I would go into much more detail, but we do have a bill we're working on next door that is rather contentious, and I probably should get back to it as soon as possible. So if there are any questions.
Further questions? Invite John L. Thank you, Chairman Starr.
This guy's going to raise me, right? I'm favorably disposed to recommend this time to raise the means without a whole lot of testimony.
Yeah.
It's got 300,000 impact.
Reggie, I try to answer his question?
I don't have any. I'm ready to move on.
Would you, I've just gotten word from the committee that they're disposed to move this to Ways and Means for it has subsequent referral. We would probably...
A lot of time?
Yeah. Probably save a lot of time.
You have a whole bunch of information on you. You have letters from different senators and representatives, okay? Now, do you know you're trying to come down here? They're trying to come down here. I can shut up.
Never stand in the way of a yes.
We do have opposition testimony.
You do?
Signed up, Kelly Hendrick with the City of Portland. And Jane Meyer is asked why. John, thank you very much for bringing this.
Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jane Myers. I represent the Oregon Dental Association. And our members are concerned about the proposed task force because that it has the potential to gut the work that we've done to date to voluntarily reduce and recycle mercury waste. I think the City of Portland will tell you more about that agreement. But it's for voluntary compliance with the city's code and the subsequent administrative rules through best management practices for dental waste. It includes the targets that we're after are amalgam, X-ray fixer, which is silver, and lead foil, which is used to contain film for X-rays. If compliance is reached through voluntary recycling, then more costly regulation would be avoided, and I think most people are aware of the cost of regulation. Government regulation increases the cost of treatment to patients, and one thing we're trying to avoid. All the parties involved in the Dental Association Portland agreement spent a lot of time, effort, and money to move the dental practices of our members to voluntary compliance. I want to remind you the dental offices are heavily regulated, sole proprietorship, small businesses, so the impacts of regulation are pretty heavy on them. And we also had a question when we ran this by the American Dental Association. They asked us whether the state could preempt the Federal Environmental Quality Commission's classification of mercury with a recommendation from a task force. So lastly, I guess I'd say that any task force that the legislature decides to fund should also include representatives of the businesses that would be affected by mercury reclassification, such as dentists, and the agencies such as the Department of Environmental Quality that are required to carry out the laws about medical waste disposal. And the real concern there is that overlapping regulation introduces confusion to the individuals who have to figure out who's in charge and how they have to comply. So we would ask that the task force studies, if they are going to be funded, include representatives of those involved in order that any conclusions that they arrive at or recommendations are run through the screen of are they practical to carry out for the people who have to carry them out. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Questions?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Kelly Hendricks. I manage the industrial project section within the City of Portland Bureau of Environmental Services. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today to talk about some of the potential implications we feel may be associated with SB 1325. We're particularly concerned with the section 1, subpart C, 2, A, and B, which direct the task force to research methods to treat solid waste containing mercury using a treatment that can be chemically reclassify the waste. And basically consider this research to determine whether this waste can be chemically reclassified. We are concerned that the provisions send a message that may encourage consideration and use of management strategies that promote waste treatment rather than reduction and recycling. These provisions would undermine some significant federal and local initiatives that reduce and eliminate the use of mercury-containing products and increase recycling of mercury-containing waste. The American Hospital Association, in their voluntary efforts with EPA, are developing and implementing pollution prevention and waste reduction activities associated with medical applications. EPA and the American Hospital Association partnership goal is to reduce hospital waste by 50% by the year 2000. This is also completely eliminating the existence of mercury found in blood pressure monitoring devices, thermometers from the waste stream by 2005. And jointly also they are working together to help identify substances to target for pollution prevention and waste reduction opportunities other than just the mercury. Most of these programs are multimedia. They are looking at things like ethylene oxide and other very toxic substances. And this is a project that Oregon Health Science University has participated in, and the City of Portland and others in the region. Mercury, as we also talked about here, is widely used in the dental industry, and it's estimated that the dentists in Oregon use approximately 600 pounds of mercury. And the city has been working with the Dental Association for the past 3 years to develop this voluntary effort and this best management practice for the dental industry. As we stated before, these efforts aren't just towards mercury, but are towards a wide variety of materials. And these practices as adopted would reduce the amount of dental waste in the waste stream by approximately 60%, and it's a considerable amount, and then this material would then be recycled. These management practices were recently approved by City Council and are being promoted by the Oregon Dental Association statewide, and are also being considered currently by the American Dental Association for use on a national level. HB 1325, subsection, again, section 1, subparts 2, C, 2, A, and D would significantly undermine all these initiatives by encouraging waste reclassification rather than elimination and recycling. These provisions run contrary to both the local and national efforts to promote pollution prevention and recycling and sustainability. There are equivalent and affordable materials available to most of the medical applications for which mercury is currently being used. And as I stated, this area is directed very specifically towards the thermometers and medical cups, but there are other areas in which they are looking to become mercury-free in their processes. And the voluntary removal of mercury from the waste stream for recycling and the continued evaluation of alternatives in the dental applications are being pursued. And I urge the committee to remove at least the sections that we feel are inappropriate. Also, the process of recycling the hazardous or mercury within the light fixtures currently is a well thought out program and is part of the toxic use reduction program within the Department of Environmental Quality. There are numerous private firms that work with industry and the commercial segment for the recycling of these mercury waste from bulbs, and there are even commercial facilities available for recycling low mercury waste bulbs. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
You have made several proposals for how the bill might be changed. We have no amendments.
Mr. Chair,
Senator Beyer,
this is obviously is going to need some more work if you want to consider that. And since it's got to go to Ways and Means, I would suggest that, given where we're at in the session, we just move it down there, and it's got a budget decision that has to be made anyway, and they can deal with any proposed amendments in Ways and Means.
Ways and Means will not deal with the substance of the bill.
Has to
go to the House. A long ways from an opportunity as far as this session is concerned. So I think it's appropriate that we move it to Ways and Means. They consider it would go to the House, which time you best be prepared to address those issues that you brought up. I think that this, you know, it's appropriate that you bring these to us. As late as it is in the session, I'm sorry we didn't have some amendments prepared, but I understand how this whole thing works, and I appreciate the help of some experienced legislators here. So I think that we will, in fact, go ahead and move it to Ways and Means. We need to close the public hearing.
Would you like a motion?
Just a moment. I've got to close the public hearing before I can take a motion. Don is trying to get our attention just momentarily. And I give him...
Can you answer some of their questions?
Well, I think you ought to talk to them afterwards or on the side. And close the public hearing, open the work session, Senate Bill 1325.
Mr. Chair, I would move that we... move SB 1325 to Ways and Means.
Senator Byers moved Senate Bill 1325 to Ways and Means. I would move it without recommendation.
I did. Would you like one?
I would like a recommendation.
Oh, do pass it.
Moved Senate Bill 1325
with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Chair,
aye. Aye. I received the necessary majority. Senate Bill 1325 is moved to Ways and Means with a due pass recommendation. That we close the work session on 1325, and we're going to look around here a moment to see which bill we got. We got, are we ready for 2080?
We have open the chair, sir. Up. We do have a representative with the bill here.
The,
and Merkley.
Merkley.
Yes. And if you want to give him courtesy.
Representative Merkley, what bill are you here on?
I'm here on the Sherman Checkup Bill
3560. We will open public hearing on 3560. And Representative Merkley.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm here to talk to you, Jeff Merkley, District 16, Oregon State Representative. I'm here to talk today about the House Bill 3560, Charitable Checkoff Bill. This bill originally came to me, the idea came to me through Habitat for Humanity, which has several dozen affiliates around the state and has expressed interest in participating in the Charitable Checkoff Program. And as I investigated the history of the Charitable Checkoff Program, I found that essentially the groups that are on the tax form for checkoff, in which people donate their surplus tax refund, or have the opportunity to donate it, hadn't changed in many years. And when it did come up every 2 years, it was a fairly contentious issue because groups that were on the form wanted to remain on the form and did not want to find themselves in competition with lots of other groups. And so I went through a series of explorations with members of the House over a way to compromise between not affecting those who are on the form and finding an opportunity for other groups to benefit from this process. And the result is the bill that you have before you today. What it does is it puts one blank line on the tax form and then provides the opportunity for groups to be listed in the instruction pamphlet. And to qualify to be in the instructions, they would have to have gross incomes of at least $1 million, gross revenues of at least $1 million, and they would have to go out and do a heck of a lot of footwork, essentially collecting 10,000 signatures of electors. And the sense is that there are probably only a handful of groups who would go through this kind of work to apply. It also have to be a 501c3 nonprofit. And the two groups I know of that were interested in this are Habitat for Humanity and Head Start. But it would give groups an opportunity to apply, and for those who read the instructions, it may provide a source of revenues. There is not currently a housing organization on the form. And this might give those who have a particular interest in housing the opportunity should a group like Habitat succeed in collecting that many signatures. A group does stay on the instructions for only 6 years, and they would come off. And so, again, that's an additional disincentive. They're not being put in or enshrined for a long period of time with this privilege of appearing in on the state instructions. So that's essentially what the bill boils down to, and I think it's a nice balance between protecting the groups that exist on the form and giving other groups in the state who are doing very important work for our citizens a chance to participate. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
How did the bill fare in the House?
Let's see if I have the exact count with me. My memory is approximately a 45-person vote count with some absent, but I do not have that number with me. I can probably obtain it.
4114.
What was it?
4114.
4114. Thank you, Ryan.
Administrator on the job.
Thank you, Madam Administrator, for helping me out there.
It's also the fiscal impact.
This has the fiscal, must go to Ways and Means, or has it been to Ways and Means?
This did not have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. It does have a fiscal, and the fiscal is based on the assumption that enough organizations would apply that there would it would take an additional page in the tax form. Approximately 100 names can go on a page in the tax instructions, not in the tax form. If you have a small number, and depending on what else is in the tax instructions that changes in the two-year period, perhaps another page would be required. In addition, there is a process that would be required to verify the signatures, and the Department of Revenue has made some assumptions about that, which I'm sure the department would be happy to speak to. My conversation about that was that the commission itself would decide how it would go about deciding to verify the signatures, and they could choose to do so in a more economical or a less economical fashion. Currently, we have a very high standard of accuracy based on a statistical analysis for our petitions, but the commission might take a much less demanding approach or a lower level of statistical certification, and could therefore by make it a much less expensive process. It really be up to the commission to decide how to do that.
Any further questions?
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Senator Barr. Question. Under our rules, since this is over 50,000, we would have to refer to Ways and Means, correct?
Correct.
Alan Lowe. Bill London.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I'm Ellen Lowe. I serve as Director of Public Policy for Ecumenical Ministries of Oregon. I also serve as Chair of Oregon's Hunger Relief Task Force. And I would like to say that in the work that we do, often in partnership with a great many organizations, some local, some statewide, we see that this might provide an opportunity for groups really to receive more contributions from folks who really care about the services that are being provided. And one of the areas I really think about now is the growing demand we have in food pantries and food banks and soup kitchens all over the state where we have an existing network, and where it might be possible to gain those 10,000 signatures. And I would suggest in the process of getting the 10,000 signatures, you would do the kind of education that would encourage people to read the instruction booklet that comes with your tax form, and it would give them an opportunity to support some charities which are not currently on the checkoff list. We have often looked at looking at the numbers on the checkoff list as maybe one of the most important polls we have about what's important to Oregonians, and this would give us an additional opportunity. We really do encourage you to give this a due pass recommendation. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, for your record, Bill Linden, representing the Oregon Head Start Association, here today to urge your support of House Bill 3560. The Oregon Head Start Association is a collection of Head Start programs across the state. In 1995, the legislature created the Head Start Trust Fund, and since then there have been efforts made to garner some funds to go in there, and they've been largely unsuccessful. As an association, we think this is the type of bill that would give a group such as ours an opportunity to get into the instructions, and we think for Head Start, as well as any other worthy charities, this is an excellent way of doing that without getting into the issue of the existing entities that are on the form, and we think we can qualify under this criteria, and again, would urge your support. I'd be happy to respond to any questions.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Any questions? Thank you very much. We have one other witness signed up, Diana. Andrietta.
I think I've got to go to her committee, if I may speak in her behalf.
Briefly, we're...
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Stephen Kefouri. I'm here representing American Fisheries Society and the Wildlife Society. I just want to briefly say, I know that some of you have heard this before, but this bill, I hate to oppose it, but we have a problem because this checkoff is a way that the non-game wildlife funds, the state of Oregon, get this money. This is how it was started 12, 15 years ago, was as a checkoff, and it was successful. And other people thought they wanted to add charities to it. This was really originally not a charity at all. Originally was a means of getting support for a state program. Now, in my view, it's a terrible way to get money for a state program. We ought to be supporting state programs with tax money so that everybody shares in the burden because everybody gets the benefit. On the other hand, that's the way this legislature has chosen to do it, and year after year they continue to choose to do it this way. The Non-Game Wildlife Fund is an important fund. It gets money exclusively almost from this source. From the state, we are able to leverage this much as $7 and $9 to $1 from other sources. And you know that our hunting and fishing licenses support fish and game that are hunted and fished. But for those species that are not hunted and fished, this is kind of what we have. And a lot of what's out there in the way of threatened and endangered species, to make sure that we don't get those endangered species happening like we've had with like spotted owl or the marbled murrelet, is to spend money now monitoring these and working on their habitats and things to make sure that we don't get there. So reluctantly, I have to oppose this bill because any time history has shown that when we add another name to the list, no matter how worthy that cause, the number of people contributing does not increase. What happens is the price of the pie gets smaller, and the state of Oregon's non-game wildlife fund would end up getting a smaller piece of the pie. And we don't see other source of that. We can't go out and ask many like the other charities can.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
What was the highest and what's the lowest that you've received?
When it first started, we got, Mr. Chair, Senator Shannon, when it first started, it seemed to me we received somewhere in the neighborhood of $400,000, is just off my memory. Mm-hmm. In rough terms, and now we're getting the neighborhood of $150,000 to $200,000. But just, hey, because we can match this, it makes a lot of money overall.
I just would like to say because sometimes even competing stores like to be beside each other because it gets more people in their area and they shop at more places. And it would just seem to me that the more there would be, the more you know it would benefit.
Mr. Pearson, Shannon, we wish that were the case. We'd love for that to be the case, because we certainly think there are a lot of worthy charities in the state of Oregon that ought to be getting more money. Historically, it just hasn't been the case.
You don't think it's because taxes are so high they just can't afford to keep giving?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Let's
read my mail.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr.
Close the public hearing, open that work session. This bill must have a referral. Yes.
Okay. I will move House Bill 3560 to Ways and Means with recommended due-pass.
Senator Tarnow has moved House Bill 3560 to Ways and Means with recommended due-pass. Any further discussion? Clerk, call the roll.
Aye. Senator
Byer?
Aye.
Senator Shannon?
Aye.
Senator
Stowe? Aye. I receive necessary majority. House Bill 3565. House Bill 3560 has been moved to Ways and Means. Close work session on open the.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We have another state representative. I think.
Representative, close. What's your bill?
2792.
2792. Open the public hearing on House Bill 2792.
I'm really happy about privacy.
I am.
This is my hour yesterday.
Yes, of course.
Mr. Starr, members of the committee, you have House Bill 2792 before you. We had a public hearing on this on the 4th of June, at which time Representative Atkinson and Representative Close came before the committee to discuss this. It would establish a property tax rebate of 3% for senior citizens who meet specified requirements, and it applies to the tax years beginning on or after January 1st of 2001. Representative Close and Representative Atkinson discussed an amendment at that time that would limit the assessed value of the principal residence to not more than $300,000. The amendment would also increase the rebate from 3% to 5%, and those are the major provisions of the amendment. Okay.
Yeah, that's A10 amendments, the A11 amendments, what do they do?
The A11 amendments make a tiny technical change that are also included in the -A10 amendment if you choose to adopt that.
All right, D.
If you don't choose the A10, then you definitely need the A11.
And the...
And this does have a subsequent referral to Ways and Means.
Has not been Ways and Means. All righty. Representative Close.
Thank you, Senator Starr and members of the committee. I'm Representative Betsy Close testifying in favor of HB 2792, the Senior Property Tax Rebate. Appreciate you allowing us another opportunity to debate the merits of this bill. The purpose, again, is to honor our seniors who are property taxpayers and will continue to be with a property tax rebate that assures their yearly rate will never increase. Because there was a concern that the 3% rate was too low at an average of $40 per payer, we offered the amendment, the -10, raising the amount to 5%, capping the qualifying asset value at $300,000. And I passed out a revenue impact statement that shows you the 3%, 5% revenue impact. 3% reduces future revenues by $9.5 million. The 5% reduces future revenues by $15.9 million. I'd like to stress that these are future revenues that are collected from seniors but returned to them from the general fund. Counties retain their share. Why should we do this? These seniors are longtime senior taxpayers. This is a way to honor them for working hard for the state of Oregon all their lives. This gives them the power of choice of what is done with the money instead of a government agency doling it out, perhaps for senior services. Keeping the 3% and 5% does not relieve the burden on these seniors. They still have to find the money and pay the taxes. What keeping the money does do is compel seniors to pay the money and to use senior programs they may not want to use and may not want to fund. I'd just like to read I sent out a survey to my district. I'd like to read one response I got. This is from a man in Albany, Joseph Klein. I feel it's urgent to have some type of property tax freeze on a single dwelling home for people 65 and over. We've got to have something. I urge you to help Oregon honor these tax-paying seniors by reducing their property tax burden, and I hope you'll pass this measure on the Ways and Means. Thank you.
May I say something?
Yes, Senator.
Oh, are you next, Senator Turner?
No. I'm going to move this bill out of here.
No, I don't want to, and I'll tell you why. You know what's going to happen in Ways and Means. Why don't we move out the date to 2003, and it doesn't have to go to Ways and Means? It'll die. I don't want to be patted on the head. And I'll tell you something else. My dad has worked full-time for 62 years. He has educated enough generations. And I just found out today that Intel is going before Washington County Commissioners tonight, and they're going to get a continuing exemption where they don't pay property taxes on about $150,000 worth of their property. And what happens is the rest of us and my senior parents and all of the rest are going to backfill for the schools in Washington County because they got a deal. And if there's anybody that deserves a deal, it's our seniors. And would you be open to extending the date so it doesn't have to go to Ways and Means?
It would still have to go to Ways and Means.
Nope. And not if it's not the next biennium. That's the rules. Go get legislative counsel. But the rules are that if it has fiscal impact on the next biennium, it's, you know, coming up. And
put it out to 2004.
Sure.
smoke out 5 years?
Sure. It doesn't have to go to Ways and Means and Die. This is such a great idea.
Thank you. Just send it down there.
Let's ask Legislative Council. There's no fiscal impact. There's no reason for it to go there.
Yeah. I thought I had the next session.
What?
That's 2 sessions down.
Well, just so it doesn't have to go out of the next biennium. There's no fiscal impact if you put it out
front. We're going to, let's see. This, we have signed up on this. We don't have any other testimony. Representative Close, I think that we're going to recess the hearing on this and get some opinion from our...
May we go ask?
We're going. We're all locked up now, LC.
Hmm?
The LC, yeah.
They stay as long as we are, don't they?
No. They close at 5:30. Unless you're on the floor, then they have to go.
Well, check with staff. Who can we check with? I'm just going to put down with the majority office.
Judy.
I would just move it down. It's Ways and Means. I mean, what's wrong with doing that?
Because that's what's going to happen with. I'm a real
one. Well, it's in the floor, and maybe you find out in the meantime.
Well, I did that to a bill that we wanted to come back because we needed to tweak it, and you would have thought it was the end of the world. They don't like to reverse bills. I think it's worth waiting to our next meeting. Yeah, I would rather if you...
Let's just wait.
Yeah.
We will... some questions been raised. We will... Close public hearing and bring this back. Probably today is Tuesday. We'd probably bring it back Thursday morning or Friday morning. So that was closed public hearing.
Thank you, Chair Starr, for letting us come back, and thank you all for considering this.
Thank you. The next bill is to... We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 2080. Got a few people signed up.
Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2080 creates a non-refundable personal and corporate income tax based on premiums paid for long-term insurance as defined in current statute. We have a couple, well, we have people here to address the will give presentation, and we also have attached to your information that dash A5, which the A5s do two things. They change the current and gross bill to where the credit will only be given to newly issued policies, and it also deletes Section 7 of the bill, which that section directed the agency to implement an outreach program. Thus, deleting that section removes the fiscal impact that this bill carries. So two things. This reduces, also you have a revenue impact of $4.3 million with the changes of the amendment reduces that revenue impact as well as it will delete the fiscal impact.
Sounds reasonable. We have nobody signed up in opposition.
And no... So which amendments do we need to move this to?
A5.
Just the A5, not the A3s?
A5.
Are we in work session?
We will close public hearing, open the work session.
A5 amendments.
Senator Bach has moved the A5 amendments to House Bill 2080. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Barr.
Move House Bill 2080 as amended to the floor with the defense.
Senator Barr has moved House Bill 2080 as amended to the floor with the due pass recommendation.
Is there a Ways and Means subsequent on this, and we would need to rescind that? There's not.
We will ask.
This will drop it out of the requirement.
We're going to ask for rescinding of that. We'll move it to the floor and with a letter asking that if you, the referral be rescinded. Please call the roll.
Aye.
Aye. I receive the necessary majority. House Bill 2080 as amended as amended as moved to the floor of the due pass recommendation. Carrier. Okay. Now, where are we next? We're going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3580. We've got Ray Phelps and Barry Wright, and Joe Brewer.
Oh, only bring good girls, right?
Chair Starr, members of the committee, House Bill 3580 is coming to you at the request of the Plumbing and Mechanical Contractors Association, and this bill would increase the maximum civil penalty for violations of plumbing and electrical codes from $1,000 to $5,000. We also have the -A3 amendment. This would add the Board of Boiler Rules to the list of those boards that can put out the civil penalty. And also, the maximum civil penalty of $5,000 would only be imposed upon finding a pattern of violation. Some DCBS would adopt by rule a definition of what constitutes a pattern of violation.
We've got favorable witnesses. We'll find out here, and Mr. Brewer, if you come to an understanding and agreement with the parties and co-comments.
Mr. Chairman, for the record, my name is Joe Brewer. I'm the administrator of the Building Codes Division. Yes, the department has worked with the proponents of the bill to address the issues that the bill addresses, and we're neutral on the bill, but at the same time, we believe that this will provide a mechanism for the department to address some bad actors in the industry who have simply begun to fold the cost of civil penalties into their cost of doing business. So we think this is a good thing.
Everybody's agreeing on it.
Can I ask a question, though? How often, how often do you levy this fine?
Through the chair to Senator Shannon, Senator, obviously we've never levied this
fine. I know, but $1,000.
It's rare. We tend to reserve that for particularly bad actors. In reviewing the database in preparation for the first hearing on this bill, I found some contractors that had as many as 17 violations. And at that point in time, we begin to believe that this contractor understands what's required to do business, but is counting on the fact that they may not get caught.
Well, if, another question. If they do 17, what has their fine been, 100 or that 1,000? Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Shannon, it depends on the nature of the violation and on the board that the statute that's involved. The civil penalties range from $250 currently to $1,000.
Okay.
There's a sliding scale and matrix that we've put together for the type and nature of the violation.
Mr. Chairman, you have one quick question.
If you're under the current law, which is $1,000 for each offense, how often do you find these cases being appealed? You go out and nail somebody with a $1,000 fine, how many appeals in a year do you have to worry about?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Tarnow, I don't have that information with me currently. I can certainly get that information for you. They are very small in number.
I don't intend to hold this process up, Mr. Brewer, whatsoever. I just thought you might be able to give me a ballpark figure. That's okay.
Mr. Chairman, again, Senator Tarnow, certainly I believe we conduct less than a dozen contested case hearings a year.
That's good.
Okay.
Closed public hearing and a work session.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Move the A3 amendments.
Senator Beyer has moved the A3 amendments to House Bill 3580. Any objection? Hearing none, so ordered.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Beyer.
Move HB 3580 as amended to the floor for due pass.
Senator Beyer has moved House Bill 3580 to as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Further discussion? Not the clerk, call the roll.
Senator Tarnow.
Aye.
Senator Beyer.
Aye.
Senator Shannon.
Aye.
Senator Starr.
Aye. I'm receiving the necessary majority. House Bill
3580 is moved. The floor to do pass recommendation. Senator Shannon will carry it.
All right.
With that, we thank you all kindly, and we'll adjourn the Senate rules.
Good meeting.
Oh, you still have it.